But just like that idea of you're playing as this small character in the setting of the house. I just, whatever reason, I just have always thought that that idea is super, super cool. And it was like one of those things where it's like you think there was a chance that after years of thinking about the game on and off, it was not going to live up to the hype that I had in my head, but it definitely did.
This is why you should play Chibi Robo. Why, hello, and welcome to another episode of Why You Should Play. I'm sure many of you are looking at the title of the episode. Some of you may be looking at the YouTube title and thumbnail and thinking, what in the world has he gotten himself into? And believe me when I tell you that when I first started this game, I had the same question myself. But as is always with the theme of this podcast, it is about passion and evangelism. And there has rarely been a brighter example of both of those things than the game that my buddy here has, I would say, almost religiously evangelized for and enthusiastically preached the good news of his beloved. But before we get to his beloved video game character, my buddy here is the third co-host of Backlog Brain Rot. I had his two other co-hosts for the Chrono Trigger episode, and he is their third partner in crime. He is obviously a massive Chibi Robo fan. He is a long-suffering sports fan as a fan of the Nets and of the New York Jets. He is a fan of many a jumpy game, and he does love his short games. He flies through so many. I am amazed at how many games that he does play in such a variety, both single player and multiplayer. He is a fan of horror games and of books and dabbles in movies as well. He is also a fan of reality television, much to my chagrin. He is, most importantly and lastly, a dog father to really the, I would say, the internet sensation that is Ellie. She is a Frisbee fiend. And so my once and future podcast partner, we actually half jokingly talked about doing a podcast together, but I think we're both really in better places right now. My buddy Brian is here. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you? Man, what an intro. I was laughing during a lot of it, especially the, you know, shout out Survivor. I mean,
I have to fully admit, I forgot to take notes about you because a lot of times I go off of memory recall. I think it provides the best sort of spontaneous content for these things because it's simultaneously a test of my memory and I can always edit it immediately after. So I can make myself sound even better. But no, how are you doing? Thank you for taking time out of your weekend.
I'm doing good. It's been a crazy week. You know, as you mentioned, Ellie, the Frisbee sensation, she's been adapting to life in the home now that we have brought in a puppy to, you know, terrorize her. So that's kind of been my life for the last like 2 weeks at this point.
And so to clarify, how old is Ellie and how old is this new puppy?
So it's funny, like it just happened, Ellie's 3.5 years old, but then I realized that Ellie is, you know, almost 4 years old at this point. I think she was born in like the late January, so we're getting close. So she's getting older now, and the puppy is a little older than, so when we brought Ellie home, she was only like 2.5 months old, I think, but this puppy is 5 months old now, so she's a bit more mature and honestly a lot less difficult than Ellie was as a puppy.
She looks to be pretty big for 5 months old, or am I recollecting wrong? Or
so, you know, we got her from the shelter, and so they don't really fully know what she is, but yeah, so Ellie is, you know, 4 years old and 25 pounds or so, and the little puppy is 5 months old and 25 pounds, so she's going to be bigger.
Oh man, that's going to be fun. That'll keep Ellie fresh and young.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying. They at first it was a bit dicey, but they say that's how it goes with dogs, and now like about a week and a half, 2 weeks in, they're getting better together. They play a lot, and I tell Ellie, I'm like, enjoy this while you can, because you're not going to be able to just bully her around it like this for much longer.
It's not dissimilar to humans. You know, when the second child comes into the world, the first child has been acclimated to just sort of the world revolving around them for however long. And then the mom and the dad, you know, have half the attention for you, and it takes an adjustment period. So, and I did promise an exclusive. So there was much discussion. It was the talk of many a community as to what the name, this big, beautiful dog daughter, have you settled on a name and what is it?
We have. There was a lot of debate. There was not one that jumped out to us instantly like Ellie's. we adopted Ellie in 2020, like right on the eve of The Last of Us Part 2 coming out. So that's was like fresh in my mind. So that's where Ellie came from. So, and so the puppy's name at the shelter was Stella, which we didn't really like that much as a name. And also we thought it sounded a little similar to Ellie. And then, you know, she was home on a trial for a week before we adopted her officially. And we didn't want to name her until we knew it was going to work out. Because once you name her, you feel, you know, you got to keep her. So. So we jumped around, you know, my girlfriend did not agree with some of the names I was throwing out, all Spider-Man related names, you know, I tried. No Mary Jane, sadly.
Was Chibi Robo proposed as a...
It was, actually. That was a no.
Okay. Unfortunately, you tried.
Yeah, I did. But we ended up deciding on Bonnie because we felt like Bonnie and Ellie go nicely together.
That is a lovely name.
Thanks.
I am so happy. That's a great name for a girl dog. I think a Bonnie eventually... bullying an Ellie around eventually sounds about right, I think.
Yeah, and that's also like kind of like when they get into hijinks, it's almost like a Bonnie and Clyde sort of situation, so it really works on all sorts of levels.
They'll be Bonnie and Clyde robbing frisbees instead of banks, right?
So yep.
have you gone out for a frisbee session with both of them yet? How has the dynamic been?
Not yet. We've been just taking them out to my parents' backyard. They have a fence in backyard, and we just kind of let them loose and then let them rustle each other. And they just, they go for it. They really go for it. Ellie likes it. Ellie, like I said, Ellie's winning now, but it's not going to last much longer.
Well, yeah, she's getting her time in while she can. You know, yeah. It's like a professional athlete. You know, you kind of want to dominate when you're physically able to. And then when the time comes, you have to admit when you're over the hill. But no, that's great. I'm glad that you adopted. You're genuinely improving their lives, and obviously there, you know, any pets, any furry friend is going to improve our lives on a day-to-day basis. So it's wonderful that you did that, and I love the name Bonnie, and I'm sure everyone is listening is very happy with that name too.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's wonderful. I was never a dog person, really. I always liked dogs. Well, once we got Ellie, that's when I became, you know, like a dog person, you know. Now I'm all about it.
Awesome. Yeah, I suspect they have converted many a skeptic. Awesome. I wanted to address that. Anyone that I know that has pets, it's always been an emphasis of mine to ask how the pets are doing. Like when the esteemed Dustin Furman came on, and I think there will be, I'm trying to think, there will be at least one other future guest that I will be sure to ask them about their pets. And there will be another future guest, I will say, next month for... I will ask about someone else in their family that is a human being. That's what I will tease. So very good. I'll leave someone with that, leave people with that little nugget to think about. So what I want to do, every little soft opening for his episode, I want to start kind of what you've been playing, and fire away.
So, you know, I chose Chibi Robo, which shows how much I love random games that no one else really cares about. But it doesn't mean that that's all I play, because I just felt like last 2 weeks I haven't played a lot because of the puppy. So I just felt nothing. I haven't played a lot that I really care enough. Shout out. But I have to just say, you know, this was my year. Pikmin 4 early in the year, but then last month we got Spider-Man 2, Mario Wonder, and of course a new Sonic game, which, you know, I know everybody else is thrilled about. So I feel like those are like the big three I got to shout out.
Yeah, Pikmin 4, I think I've played a little bit of the original Pikmin. That series, it has, I would say it's fair to say, it has some real-time strategy elements,
yes.
Would you say? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and real-time strategy games, I have a love-hate relationship with them, because I swear, no other type of video game sucks away time quite like real-time strategy games. And Spider-Man 2, I was very impressed with it. I was very, very satisfied. A lot of people will say, oh, it's just more Spider-Man. And I'm like, you know what? Sign me up.
Exactly.
So, and I know you are maybe the biggest Spider-Man fan that I know. And for it to do right by a huge fan such as yourself, I know you had many a reaction to many moments in the game, which I played it before you. And I was like, oh, Parrot is going to know this. Parrot's going to know that. It's good to play and complete a game and then see others go through it and get the same reaction. So it's very rewarding. So I was very happy with that game, too. What I also like to do with every episode is I like to run through the guest's personal experience, because I feel like whenever someone advocates for a game as much as, for example, you have with Chibi Robo, I think they must have something more meaningful of an experience with the game and background with it. So what is your background with Chibi Robo? How did you come to fall in love with this amazing but small character akin to your beloved two dog daughters?
So I was thinking about this, and it's It's definitely true. I feel like a lot of like hardcore love for a game can often stem from like nostalgia or your childhood or something like that. And then this game's like almost half that and half not, because I actually never played this until like much later in my like childhood. Like I didn't play this until high school. But where I would say it begins is as a kid. I don't know for sure, but like I know my mom has talked about like one of the first movies she ever took me to see, it was Toy Story. And as you know from playing Chibi Robo, there's a lot of Toy Story DNA in this game. And I just have like a long love of Toy Story and then the idea of the small scale character in a big setting. But the big setting is like a setting that you can recognize. So in this game, it's the house. So like when I was little, I remember going to my uncle's house, who had a PS. He had like every video game system. He's where I got my like interest in video games from. And I remember him having, I think he might have even bought it just for me to play, but he had the Toy Story video game on PS1. I don't know if you ever played that. I mean, you played as Buzz Lightyear. That one is like, you know, it's a 3D game and you're in Andy's house in the first level and you're playing as Buzz Lightyear and you're running around. And, you know, it's not like a particularly amazing game by any stretch, but just like that idea of you're playing as this small character in the setting of the house. I just, for whatever reason, I just have always thought that that idea is super, super cool, which also probably lends into why I like Pikmin so much. But, and then I, you know, flash forward and all through elementary school, middle school, even high school, I had a Game Informer subscription because we had a GameStop and I would go there all the time and I'd beg my grandmother to buy me games and then I would sell those games back to get new games, you know, for a fraction of their value. I don't know about you, but I long regret all those games I would trade in. But I remember in Game Informer, there were ads for Chibi Robo, and I was just so interested in the idea because of like what I was talking about. But then I feel like, I mean, I was looking at it and the game did not sell very much. So it's probably not surprising that I never found a copy of this game as a kid. Because it's not like I had, you know, back then, it's not like I could just search the internet and find it or whatever. So I just never found a copy of it until high school when I like re-remembered the game and I went and I got a copy from GameStop, I believe, and I played it for the first time. And it was like one of those things where it's like you'd think there was a chance that after years of thinking about the game on and off, it was not going to live up to the hype that I had in my head, but it definitely did. I just loved exploring the house and all the different aspects. The gameplay, which we'll go into, was addicting to me, kind of like almost like an Animal Crossing feel, which I also loved at the time. But yeah, I think that's really the origin of what made me fall in love with Chibi Robo.
Oh, that's good. And it sounds like, when we'll go into this later on in the episode, but it sounds like what they were going for, although it didn't sell well, I think for the people that did play it, the sort of themes and what the inspirations they were drawing from definitely had their intended effect on the people that played them. So yeah, that's good. And I know it obviously didn't sell well, which I think is part of why you advocate for it so much. And that's honestly, that's really a perfect example of this podcast, is that this game really didn't sell well at all. It did get some sequels, which we'll address later on in the episode. A surprising number of sequels, and it did review pretty well. If you go on Metacritic, I was surprised that the critic reviews were pretty decent. They were like in the mid-70s. They weren't terrible for, you know, for a game that commercially seemed to have flopped, but these reviews are very good. I think they're in like the mid-80s or so, 8.56, something like that. So I was very surprised to see that. What I wanted to start out with is, you know, I'm always curious with kind of the development story of games, and I looked up the developer of this game, Chibi Robo, which has the subtitle Plug Into Adventure. The box art is very cool. I believe he is holding, yes, he's holding his own power cable, which is attached to him over his head. It's kind of a funny animation for a very cute character. I think Chibi Robo is 10 centimeters tall, according to the ironclad canon of the universe. And so, yeah, he's very small. So like when Brian said that you're a small thing in a very large world, you very much are. We'll expound more on that in a moment. But the developer of the game is a studio called Skip Limited. I believe they are Japanese. They were in Tokyo. They developed games from 2003 all the way up to 2015. They were pretty much a Nintendo exclusive developer via Bandai. So they partnered with Bandai Namco pretty frequently, and they developed games for various Nintendo platforms, including GameCube, obviously, with Chibi Robo, and then some GBA games, games for DS, Wii. They produced some games for the online stores for Wii and the DSi, and then they would go on to develop games for the DS, the Wii, and then a couple of Chibi Robo games during the last couple of years for the 3DS. So that's a little bit of a background on them. I believe they are or defunct as of 2015. There is no more credits that I see for them, but they, it's just kind of a, one of those developers that made a lot of games that you don't necessarily hear about or know about. Were there any other games that you're of theirs that you're familiar with?
No, it says that, I don't know, you know, Wikipedia is Wikipedia, but it says that by 2020, they have not released a game since 2015, but they had never actually officially been defunct. They're just out there, or they're defunct and no one knows, or this hasn't been updated. I'm not sure, but
you would think if they got credited on, because, like, you know, with big games nowadays, like every single outlet or entity gets credit, if not in the opening credits, then in the back credits. And so maybe just the wiki hasn't been updated, but maybe I don't know what they're doing. They're doing such background work that they're not getting credited. Mm-hmm. And I know Japanese developers are much more close to the chest about which studios are working on what. So even internally, Nintendo has very cryptic names for their studios. They have, like, I forget the external partner development team 8 or some weird, it's like a very government sounding code names for their team. They don't have cool names like Insomniac or stuff like that. So it can be hard to determine who is working on what, but that adds to their mystery. They may or may not be defunct. They could still exist. We don't know. So, but yeah, that's the background on them. Like I said, we're both looking at here. They have a Wikipedia page. They had a logo and they were founded in July 2000. So they've been around for just over 20 years. Their website, I believe, is archived. Yeah, their website doesn't even exist anymore. You can access it through the archive.
So they're gone. I've, like, scrolling through the games. It's all, like you kind of said, they're all just games that I've never heard of. Like, I probably would have even known existed, except for the Cheat Me Robo sequels, which we can talk about later. And then Captain Rainbow, I have heard of on Wii. That's like kind of those, like, one of those random games you would discover, like, on a YouTube video. I just remember seeing clips of it back in the day.
A vast majority of their games are either straight to an online store or a handheld. Their first game is called Gift Pia, was for GameCube in 2003. But they have a few games at the beginning and end of their life cycle that were for console, but all the ones in the middle of their tenure were for either straight to online store or for handheld. So yeah, it's just one of those developers that doesn't seem like they ever really broke through to be really prominent, but which is kind of a shame given this game that we'll heap all sorts of praise on. Yeah, I always like to give a kind of a shout out to the developer and what their history is. And there's more to a developer than necessarily just a single game that we recall. So I always want to be curious about what else they worked on. So let's finally dive into this game itself. Chibi Robo Plug Into Adventure was released for the Nintendo GameCube, the wonderful console with the amazing library of games, which are now very expensive physically. Much to my chagrin, I looked at getting a GameCube and maybe collecting games for about, I don't know, 5 minutes before I looked at prices. Do you own this game physically? Do you still have a GameCube? And
yes, I do own this game physically, which is, yeah, I never realized it was worth so much, which makes sense because, like I said, it didn't sell super well. Unfortunately, I don't have the full box with the art and everything on it. Like, I have one of those, I'm sure you remember, like, buying used games at GameStop and they would just give you, like, their little crappy cases with the no art. But so that's what I have. So it wouldn't be as worth as much, but I do have the disc.
Awesome. Yeah. And to reiterate, I mention this every episode when it applies. We are fully supportive of physical games here, without question. But I digress. Chibi Robo Plug Into Adventure was released for the Nintendo GameCube in Japan on June 23rd, 2005. It was then released in North America on February 8th, 2006, followed by the EU on May 26th, 2006. So kind of a little bit of a staggered release across the geographical regions. And the basic premise of the game is that you are a small, like I said, I believe 10 centimeter robot named Chibi Robo. And your goal in life is to be a sort of task performer for a family and to help them do chores around the house, help with projects, be an assistant to them, kind of be on call for their various needs. And when you do perform various tasks, something as simple as like cleaning up a wrapper off the floor or something as major as like retrieving something for one of the family members in the house, you collect happy points. And their goal is for Chibi Robo is to collect enough happy points to be the number one ranked Chibi Robo. And so that's basically the gist and the premise of it. Without really going too deeply into the gameplay at this point, Brian, is there anything else that you wanted to kind of speak to very broadly about the premise and the setup?
Yeah, I think you pretty much covered it. I think it's interesting because, like, you would think just from the art and like the way it's described that it plays probably similar to what you're imagining, just a little less jumping and stuff, but the plot is a lot more, I want to say in depth, but it's more in depth than you think it would be. Like the character, like it's like the family that is taking on this, that buys this chibi robo, you know, you have the dad who's struggling with his job, and the mom who's worrying about money, and the daughter who is like kind of trying to cope with all this family drama by thinking that she's a frog, which is just such a weird thing that is also really charming. So I just think it's interesting how the game is not quite as it seems. Like right from the get-go, you can tell.
They put so much more thought into where you would be going and what you will be doing and the characters that you'll interact with is what I'll say. And we'll get more into the characters in a little bit. And the story just, honestly, it gets more and more interesting. Interesting is not a word that I thought I would say with this game when it comes to where the narrative and the story takes you. But yeah, you will run into so many more different characters than I suspected, than I ever thought would be in this game. I know when I was chatting with you privately, I was just more and more taken aback and surprised by where it went. So, and another kind of major aspect of the premise is that you have a companion with you. He's kind of your...
He's like your manager almost.
Yeah, he's almost like your agent. He's like a conduit between you and the greater corporation. I forget the corporation's name that you're a product of. But yeah, the corporation is the one that doles out the happy points. It's very kind of dystopian almost. That you're basically you're a literal robot of this corporation meant to serve people all day and make them happy. But yeah, even he, Television is the name of.
Yeah, he's like this little floating television who talks, because like I guess the key thing is that Chibi Robo himself cannot talk. They just like pull up, like his head will open up and you can lift up. Like there's times where you have to say yes or no, and it's just like a check mark or a no sign, and it'll lift up and pop out of his head. So Telly's role in the game is that he's just like the conduit that explains what Chibi Robo wants or whatever. And he's also used for intense comic relief, I would say.
There was one moment specifically that I was just guffawing. I was just cracking up laughing. And I think you know the moment that I'm referring to. It just kind of comes out of nowhere. I'm like, what in the world is going on? Yeah, it's very, very funny. That's another thing about this game, is that it is surprisingly funny with how absurd so much of it gets. And yeah, I don't really want to too much into it, because we'll dive more into the story when we start talking about some of the characters that you'll run across. And when I say characters, I mean they are true characters. Capital C, bolded, italicized. They get pretty wild. So the gameplay is probably what impressed me the most about this game, is that this game is... I don't know if I want to call, I guess I could call, almost call it like a, it's like a, it's like a 3D sort of Metroidvania puzzle sandbox game. If I want to sort of sum it up in a few words, you basically gain different abilities and items and tools of when you start progressing through the game that allow you to navigate to other areas of the house, different parts of rooms within the house, based on abilities, like I said, abilities and tools that you get. And it does get very rewarding when you kind of look up at some areas, and you're like, oh, I want to go there because I see like a collectible, or I see maybe like a tool I can pick up. And then when you're able to do it, it's very rewarding, similar to, you know, a Metroidvania or a puzzle game when you see an area that you're not able to access, but you know you'll be able to in the future. And there is, like you mentioned, there is some jumping. It's not really a jumpy game, but you're able to minimally jump. A lot of it is contextual based. Like there is a slight little loading bar when you want to climb up somewhere. A major aspect of the gameplay that really drives a lot of your traversal is what I kind of call your dual stamina / health bar. So it's basically your Chibi Robo's battery, which you're able to upgrade throughout the course of the game. When you accumulate more happy points, they establish different thresholds. And so when you eclipse a threshold, the company increases your battery expansion. So when you increase your battery expansion, you get more tools. You're able to use those tools to progress to other areas and have enough stamina to be able to get to these other areas of these rooms. So Brian, what were other aspects of the gameplay that you wanted to touch upon?
Yeah, I think that sort of gameplay loop like really gets me, where you can see all these things that you want to get to, and you have like a mental checklist in your mind, like, oh, I see a tool up there I want to get, or I see this I want to get to, but I can't yet because my battery isn't good. So you kind of explore, and you're cleaning up, and you know, one of the first things you find, which we should talk about, is just like how he has different tools, like you said, but like one of them is a toothbrush, which I just think is funny because all the tools kind of play into his size. So it's like, oh, there's there's muddy dog prints on the ground, but I don't know how to clean them. It's like, oh, but I found a toothbrush, and so now I can use that to clean up the paw prints. So you're kind of using the cleaning, picking up garbage, cleaning up messes as like a way to gain the happy points, which increase your battery, which lets you explore further and higher than you could before. And then you're slowly getting the things that you were able to see earlier and finding new things to like remember in the back of your mind. I just think that kind of loop really speaks to me and really makes me feel addicted playing a game.
It really does. And you mentioned it too, with the simple act of like getting the toothbrush, you get it. I think it's like one of the first tools that you get. It's the most basic tool. You basically just use it to wipe pretty much anything off the floor, footprints, paw prints, etc. And a couple of other things that while you were talking that I thought of is, one is that part of the little micro rewards in this game is that there is a sound, a distinct sound for every single thing that you do. When you wipe up something off the floor, there is a little chime that continues playing while you wipe, when you rub the toothbrush. Different surfaces that you walk upon produce different noises. When you're climbing, that's a different noise. Every single thing that you do has a specific sort of little dopamine reward within it, and it's very, very addicting. It adds so much to the atmosphere and the charm of the game. And it's never really, I would say it never gets really overbearing, because based on the different things that you do, the musical cues change so frequently in the game that the word I think of it, it constantly tickles you and like a tickles your brain and your, honestly, your heart and your soul. There's so much soul in this game, despite, you know, some gameplay caveats that I have, which we'll talk about near the end of the episode. But did you want to, were there any specific sounds during the gameplay that really stick out to you?
I just think like the sound, like as soon as you talk, I had a note on this too. I just think it's so cool how no matter what you do has a unique sound. And just think about how much like effort and time and thought that had to go into doing something like that. I think like the sound of picking up and putting down the plug is something that you hear so often, because when you pick up your plug, you can run a little faster. So you're kind of doing it a lot, or you're picking up your plug, because I don't know if we mentioned it, but you know, you're, like you said, your battery is your health and your stamina. And at the beginning of the game, it's pretty low. So you have to charge a lot. So you have to pick up your plug and charge at the different outlets throughout the house. So you're kind of managing, oh, I can do this, this, and this before I'm going to, you know, run out of battery. So that's also part of the loop. But yeah, I just think that sound of picking up the plug and putting it and then dropping it is just something that it's like in my head. I can just perfectly imagine it.
One other thing I wanted to highlight too, and this actually kind of plays into the sound. Well, actually, a couple of things. You mentioned picking up your plug that's attached to you, and you can see it on the box art. It's, this plug is attached to him, and you can carry it over his head. Is that not only do you move faster, the constant theme that's playing, the music plays faster too. So it's accommodating to your literal play speed, your little traversal speed that you're going at. It's just a subtle bit of thought that I don't know that I've seen many other games do it. Like when you get the star power up in Mario, for example, the music starts playing much faster because, you know, you're more powerful and you can move faster. But it's not necessarily at will, right? Like you still have to get the star power up to do that. And Sonic, I think, does something similar with increasing the play speed of the music. But and another aspect too is there is a genuine day-night cycle in this game as well. And the game will clearly tell you, either television or one of the characters will tell you like, oh, I'm going to be doing this at night, or maybe it's best to wait till nighttime to do this, or maybe I'll be around here. And it's part of the management of, like you said, kind of planning out what you need to do or when you can do something.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to bring that up too. Just it all ties into that idea that you always have something else that you want to be doing while doing other things. And that just kind of keeps that loop going. It's almost like not at all similar games, but like Persona 5 or something, where it's just like, oh, I want to do this day, that the other thing the next day, and just like kind of managing that is a lot of fun to me for some reason. That's just like a gameplay loop I really like, which I guess, you know, there's a lot of similarities in like what I like about Chibi-Robo versus something like Pikmin. It's very similar in that way.
Within the context of being a little worker robot, it's a perfect thematic gameplay loop for everything that you need to do. And what's kind of good about it is it's more engaging for the player too, is that you don't have a literal checklist. You just kind of have to remember things that you need to do in specific rooms, or you'll remember like, oh, I have this item to give to this character in this room, and I can do this other thing in this room, or in the meantime, while I'm there, I can pick up some garbage on the floor and put it in the trash can. And what cracked me up too, that I picked up on, I think about halfway through the game, is that there are some subtle storytelling character things. Like when you're in the same room as the dad or the child, there's just a lot more trash around. There's like wrappers, and versus the mom who's like, it's always clean on the floor around her. There's like hardly anything to pick up and throw in the garbage. So that just kind of little thing cracked me up. And the dog like leaves footprints when it's going in and out of the sliding door in the kitchen out to the backyard. And yeah, it's just little funny things that you pick up on, and you'll know like, oh, if I need a few more pieces of garbage for more happy points to put me over the edge to get more battery, I can just go here and grab this, pick up these items real quick and throw them in the garbage. So
yeah. Also like the day and night cycle is very good from a like a literal story sense, but also just like you were saying with the garbage, but it's like as the story is going on, you're learning, you can kind of learn more about the characters even just by what they're doing in the house based on day and night, which I also think is just like a subtle but really cool touch.
You kind of hinted at it, I believe, earlier. We don't want to get into spoilers, but there is some like genuine like character dynamics at play with what's going on. I was taken aback. I'm like, wow, they're actually kind of broaching upon some touchy subjects. And it does, they do take it further than I expected, but they do it in a very effective way. And there definitely is a resolution to all of it. It's surprisingly very touching at the end. Was there anything else kind of about the gameplay? I guess we can talk about some of the tools. There's nothing really that, well, I think there's like one thing that's kind of spoiler that I could think, but was there anything with the gameplay that you wanted to highlight and really point out and emphasize?
I think it's just cool, the feeling of being the small little robot in the big setting, like I said, and just like looking around and being like, okay, I want to get up there. How can I do that? Oh, I'm in the kitchen, so I'm going to climb up the handles of the drawers. Or, oh, I'm in the living room, so I'm going to climb up on this box, jump onto the chair, use your little hover glider. You get like a little propeller like very early in the game, and you can hover like a short little distances. So like, okay, I can jump the gap between the chair to the table to the other table to the couch. It's like, okay. So I think that is just also like the exploration in the game is very fun, just trying to like think about like, how can I do this despite the fact that I'm 10 centimeters high, tall or whatever.
You're 10 centimeters tall and you're honestly not very mobile. Like I said, a lot of your traversal is going to be contextual based. Like you have to sort of walk up to a ledge and keep holding down the forward button to, it generates a quick little loading bar. And then it's basically you jumping onto a ledge or climbing onto something is an animation. It's not necessarily a free jump. So it is very structured in that sense, but it's all within the context of the design of the game. It's designed to like, okay, if you have the stamina, you can perform its jump. It's not necessarily a sort of twitch movement. You don't need to be like a skilled platforming gamer to play this game, which I definitely appreciated, maybe which turned some people off. But I was still overall very, very pleasantly surprised with the overall macro design of the game, if you will, and how it all really fit together so well and became more and more and more rewarding, both in gameplay and story with the characters that you interact with. And so with the characters, we mentioned Chibi Robo, we mentioned Television. So yeah, we have Chibi Robo, we have Television, and another core aspect of the characters is this family, the Sandersons. The mom is named Helen, the dad is named George, and the daughter is named
Jenny.
Yes. So that is the main core cast of characters. And the broad setup, I'll let you expound upon some of the other characters of your favorites. I'll give the kind of the boring background premise is that the father, George, is unemployed and he has a love of this toy, this kind of, you mentioned Toy Story earlier, it's kind of a Buzz Lightyear knockoff called Drake Redcrest. He's like basically a space ranger. He likes to flex and to patrol and be like a bastion of truth and justice. So he's kind of like a Superman meets a Buzz Lightyear. And the dad, George, just loves collecting all the toys of him and merchandise and memorabilia. And the mother is just kind of sick and tired of him being unemployed and just being interested in toys and this sort of comic book character. And then the daughter just kind of feels somewhat neglected. She's usually just kind of off by herself on the floor coloring, and she gets so bored that she gets lost into her imagination, to where she thinks that she is a frog, down to dressing up in a frog costume and saying ribbit when you interact with her. So that is the kind of core cast of characters that you'll interact with to further drive the main plot and story. And Brian, I'll let you take it away from here. Anything on the main cast that you wanted to point out and highlight? And then I'll let you take it away with some of your favorite minor characters.
Also, we got to add Tao the dog, also major.
Yes,
character.
Yes,
very,
of course,
very important dog. Part of the family.
Of all days and episodes to forget about the dog. Yes, yes, the dog. Yeah, I wish you interacted with him a little bit more, to be honest, besides just cleaning up his. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you summed it up very nicely, because we don't want to go into spoilers, but I just think it's interesting how the characters do develop, a plot develops, you learn a lot more about their backstories, their lives, and I just think that's very well done and definitely not something you'd expect going in. I want to shout out one funny thing. I always think there's a lot of different cutscenes in the game where you're interacting with the family, or whether just one-on-one or as a group, or, you know, in pairs, and the dad does a thing that I just wrote down that I just thought was so funny, where he gets so excited and the camera just like shoots up to the ceiling and he like leans back and just is like yelling his excitement into the sky. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. He's
yes.
Like, oh wow. That's like he's really funny.
I don't know if I would call it like a kind of an anime effect, but it's definitely the way they use the camera angle, and they sort of it's a straight above angle and they zoom out. So it's like the camera is following his like booming voice as he's very, it's like you're following his sound waves as he's loudly exclaiming his excitement.
Yeah, I think all four of them have like really funny moments. They're all like great. I definitely felt very bad for the Jenny character. I think she's a charming, cute little girl, and it's definitely like a kind of as you mentioned before, it's a deep subject to tackle in a game like this.
Yeah, I said that. It's really qualifies as neglect a lot of the times, because the game, I mean, it's not really a spoiler. The first kind of major event that you start with is her birthday. I think she's like, what? I don't know if they say how old she is, seven. Yeah, it's literally her birthday. Like, there's a birthday cake and everything. And you're like, oh, this is such a happy family. They're celebrating her birthday with the cake. And then as the course of the game goes along, you're like, there's more going on here. But what's great about the interweaving of the gameplay and story is that the more abilities that Chibi-Robo gains, you genuinely improve their lives in many profound ways, not just cleaning up little candy wrappers or whatever. Like, you're genuinely helping to reconnect them as family members. So I found it, like I said, I found it quite charming and quite touching. But yeah, go ahead and talk about some of the supporting characters. I don't think there's anything really that spoiler with the supporting characters, just some of your favorite ones, because there's just so many nutty characters in this game.
Yeah, so that's where the Toy Story element comes in. Like, as we said, nothing we've talked about really has screamed Toy Story, because we've kind of not mentioned too much the fact that in this house, when the humans aren't in the room, so mostly at night, but there's definitely some in the day, like the toys are alive and they all talk to you and they're all their own characters. And I think that is one of the things I really think is cool about this game, is obviously that concept, but it kind of like blends the idea of the main story of the Sandersons, but then like a lot of these other toys have fully fleshed out side stories with like different tasks and things to do. And then they feel like they could be side stories, but they also kind of intertwine with the main plot so much that, I don't know about you, but I found it a little hard to even know what was side missions and what was main plot, which I think like kind of was a strength, not a negative.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. There is no formal quest log. Like, there isn't a list of main quests and side quests in like a lot of these what would be modern day games. So I think it did make you more curious as to like, hey, is this a side quest? Is this a main quest? Where is this going to go? Yeah. And like you said, a lot of them interweave together. Like, there's a, I don't want to say a knockoff, but there's like a kind of an inspiration for the Army Men toys, but they're all eggs. And they have this ongoing feud with the dog, Tao. They're like, this thing is a menace. We need to, one of the last missions with them is basically to train how to contend with the dog. And you're literally getting dog tags from like fallen soldiers and stuff. Like, it's just, it's just so wild. Like, what is going on right now? And you have to do like obstacle courses to prove yourself as a member of their squad or their platoon. And there's a Sarge character. He has like a mustache and he's very drill sergeant-y. He's always yelling at them and ordering them around and running them through drills and push-ups and everything. So
tell them that Chibi-Robo is better than them. I love that. He's like, Chibi-Robo's a real soldier. The eggs are definitely the egg soldiers, the free rangers I wanted to shout out. And then I think you mentioned, but Space Hunter Drake Redcrest patrols the living room at night. And I think he's a really fun character. He gives you, you know, an item so you can be like him. And then he just, his, you know, he thinks he's protecting the house and he's really just, you know, circling the living room. And he has such dramatic poses. He poses and fireworks shoot out. And I just love like how over the top he is.
And you reminded me of that too, with his pose. Like, you pose in front of him every so often in your suit and you get like 10 happy points. And talking about interweaving characters, there's another, there's a caterpillar. I think it's a toy caterpillar character named, is it Sophie? I believe is the character's
name.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, she has a crush on Drake Redcrest. So when Drake Redcrest gives you his uniform, you go over and talk to Sophie in your uniform and she just like basically swoons and almost passes out and loses her composure. And it's just so adorable and funny. And there's different things like that. You'll pick up on cues. Like you'll get a frog costume. And when you go up to Jenny in your frog costume, she gets happy and you get happy points. And there's another side quest involving the frog costume I don't even want to spoil because it's just so nuts and insane. But that's another aspect too, is the costumes actually have meaning and purpose. They're not just like meaningless cosmetics. They actually have utility to them. So were there, I'm trying to think of other characters that I wanted to highlight.
There's a lot of interesting ones. You know, there's Captain Plankbeard, who lives in the basement, the pirate. And then there's, I actually don't even know how to pronounce that. I don't even know what the toy is supposed to be, the Great Pico or whatever it is.
Oh, it's, the fortune teller?
Yeah, it's like a, I don't even know what it's supposed to be. It's a very bizarre looking toy.
Yeah, it's Peyoki. I think it's supposed to be like a spin on like Native American.
That was an interesting one because you can just like gamble away your money, which is so random. And I did it, and I was, you know, I was fully ready to cheat and save state my way to riches, but I never even had to. I just got it right four times in a row, and I was instantly went from like, you know, 2,000 coins at the beginning of the game to max. So I'm like, okay, kind of broke the game a little bit.
We were chatting about our progress broadly throughout the game, and you basically broke the game. Like, you broke the economy. You can buy like pretty much everything. And
yep.
And that's part of it too. You unlock items, but you also have to buy some items too with the economy. Like, you buy traversal enhancers like bridges and giant ladders to get up. So yeah, you can definitely expedite your progress in the game by breaking it with this fortune teller gambling, which you dabble in gambling too. So that's... yeah.
You know, that's, I was trained. I was ready for it. You know, it breaks the game. It also does it because you really don't need very much money in this game to buy all the things. Like, there's never really a point where you're struggling, I feel like.
No, it's the economy isn't very robust. It's very, very limited. And even when you buy everything in a classification in the menu, it like grays it out and locks it off. So there's literally a point where you'll just have a bunch of money that you cannot even use. So one thing that did surprise me, this kind of combines the gameplay and the story and characters, is that there is so much in this game. There's so many, like, I was going through the list of side characters and there were like two or three that I didn't even interact with or meet. And I know you mentioned when you replayed it that there was so much that you missed throughout your quick replay that was genuinely surprised me, because you, like I said, you look at this box art, you look at this, oh, it's a Toy Story knockoff game. It's like, no, there is so much in this world and there's so much going on with every room. And I think that was a good call with having a relatively limited number of rooms. I think there's six total off the top of my head.
The living room, the backyard, the kitchen, the like foyer, the basement, and then the two bedrooms. So seven rooms, but you know, one of them's like a staircase basically. But yeah, so seven rooms, and each room, yeah, it has its own things going on in it, which is fun. And yeah, no, there's a lot of other like toy characters. You know, there's the teddy bear, there's the princess, there's the frog you mentioned, there's like a Lego, and there's just like a lot of different ones. I could definitely see like some of them you might not even come across.
It's a credit to the overall design that each room kind of has its own story and its own little ecosystem that you explore, and it's all very rewarding. Like the Captain Plankbeard thing is very rewarding. That's one of many aspects that pleasantly surprised me about this game, why I was so happy that I played through it and beat it. And I think I'm trying to think of what my play time was, roughly 15-ish hours. I think if you kind of want to do a mix of mainlining and like being comprehensive, kind of a midway point is about 15 hours throughout the game. I think if you want to mainline, it'll be like 11, 12 hours.
Yeah. So like I mainlined, but I did like a lot of the side quests and it took me like 10, but I also had played it before. So it's kind of like, I think on your first try, like your first playthrough, yeah, I feel like the 10, 15 is probably what you're looking at.
So yeah, were there any other... I'm trying to think of any other characters that we wanted to highlight. I think we ran through a lot of them without spoiling.
Yeah, there's a couple other characters that I would love to shout out, but I feel like they're maybe more in the spoiler territory, so we can just save that for when people hopefully play.
I think we provided people with enough entertaining setup to that where they'll want to be more curious about what's going on. But yeah, definitely when you unlock a new room, there's definitely a lot to explore within that room. So don't feel like you need to just try to mainline the main story and just stick with the family. There is so much other goodness going on. So were there any other aspects that you have down in your notes about the game that you wanted to really highlight or shout out?
I just want the one small thing we didn't talk about was the weird, totally out there chibi robo doors that are in the house. They're like almost like a collectible. Like there's these little doors that look like chibi robo's head, and you use your plug and expend some of your energy to open them, And then you go in the room and it's just like this weird, trippy, like Twilight Zone-y music almost, and just like eyeballs floating everywhere. And then there's just money you pick up and then you just leave. And then it's never explained what in the world is happening or why, but it's so bizarre.
And what's funny too is you can go back into them and still expend energy, but there's nothing else in there. There's no like further rewards. It's like it was a mechanic that they tested out and just left in the game and didn't further explore it. It's very bizarre. And you do get a decent amount of money. Like, I think you can get like as much as a few hundred. I don't know what the currency is called.
Moolah.
Moolah? Yeah, is it called moolah? Yeah, so it can be worth it. I think you expend, what do you expend? I think you expend like 10 energy or 10 stamina.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that is a very bizarre aspect of the game. And so there's nothing else with the kind of the gameplay or the story of the characters. What I wanted to get to is kind of the caveats. And like I said, I didn't want to be, we're never negative on this podcast or with any of the episodes. But I do want to kind of establish some qualifiers. And the first one that I have that I kind of hinted at is it can be pretty obtuse as to what to do next to progress in the story. There's no map markers. There's no prompts. There's no quest log. What you really have to do is engage with the characters. You have to go up and initiate conversation with them. And they'll usually, if not explicitly tell you what they need or what they want, they'll hint at something else that you need to do involving another character or another room or another time of day. Would you agree with that to kind of set people's expectations?
Yeah, that is one of the things I wrote down. It's where we said before, it makes the world feel alive when you have all these side quests and they kind of are intertwining, but that's where it can kind of be confusing sometimes, where the side quests give you things that you need to progress the main quest, but you have no real way of knowing that that's what you're supposed to be doing. So there can be times where you're just kind of just wondering what's going on.
One common refrain that I always had in my head is when in doubt, just go up and interact with a character. They'll usually be able to at least nudge you in the right direction. They'll say like, hey, I need this item. It'll prompt you. Like when you have the item, it'll be a distinctly different prompt. Like, oh, you have the item for me, and you click yes and give it to them. And there are some times when a cinematic will automatically trigger when you enter a room. And sometimes you'll need to engage with the character in order to play the cinematic. So it can be kind of unclear at times. It can be a little bit frustrating. That's what took me aback a little bit. Like I said, I was like, oh, it's this kind of children's Toy Story game. But no, you have to kind of be aware with what's going on with the state of every character in the room that they're in and the time of day. And so, yeah, it definitely keeps you on your toes. It can be pretty sneaky. Another caveat that I have is that kind of moment-to-moment traversal can be a little bit awkward due to its overwhelming majority of it is contextual. You basically, there is no climb button, I don't think. You basically go up to a ledge or a ladder and you basically keep holding down the forward button and it basically launches an animation to where you climb up on the ledge or you get up on the ladder and then you can progress forward. So it's not really, I don't think I even called it a platformer. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. Was there anything about like the traversal, moment-to-moment traversal that you wanted to specify?
Yeah, there's definitely some moments where like, I would say like generally speaking, the camera in this game is not an issue, which is nice. But there are definitely times where it's like a little bit of a tight spot. And sometimes you don't, I don't know, there were times where I didn't notice there was a gap and I just like accidentally walked off. Even though like you have to hold forward, which is nice, like to actually drop off something, like it stops you from doing it. But if you're just kind of walking, like kind of thinking about something else, all of a sudden you might fall off something. There were definitely times that happened. And then obviously, like, it's really cool to be like, oh man, I'm tiny and I have to conquer the stairs. Like, it's really kind of rewarding and cool, like, the first few times. But like, at certain points, like, okay, I've had to go up these stairs so many times, it's a little annoying.
In the spirit of that Metroidvania aspect that I shouted out, when you get a shortcut, like when you unlock these little portals, like, for example, you'll get a portal to go from the bottom of the stairs to the top. It is like conquering a boss battle, like I pointed out in a Metroidvania. When you get a shortcut, it is like a huge achievement. Or when you get a shortcut to get into a room or something as simple as like a string that you can climb up to get up to a higher ledge instead of having to move a ladder or something. It is very, very rewarding for sure. And like you said, it's very hard to fall in the game. There is a literal like kind of warning animation. The sort of animation loading bar becomes red and Chibi Robo kind of staggers for a second, basically like, hey, you're going to fall. And you can technically fall in the game, but every time you do fall, there is a pretty sizable warning before you do. And yeah, there is the propeller so you can soft land. There is fall damage too in the game. Yep. So it is, I think it is based upon the distance that you fall, but the propeller softens your landing to where you don't take damage, but you do expend a lot of energy by using the propeller. So it is pretty consistent, like in that way with the physics. So, and this is just broadly speaking. I don't know if it's the Metroidvania or the sandbox stuff. If you do get kind of lost or stuck, there can be lots of repetition with having to return to same areas. And early on in the game, when you don't have any shortcuts, you don't have a lot of stamina, it can feel like it does get tedious. But like I said, if you sort of refocus your efforts on interacting with characters, I think you'll find that you progress in the game. But there were a couple of spots to where I did feel kind of stuck and lost, and felt like I was going around in circles and not really progressing much in the story or the characters. So definitely keep that in mind. Would you have any other recommendations that we've kind of mentioned it a few times as beyond just interacting with the characters that helped you progress in the game?
I would say use your chibi vision a lot. You can go into first person mode and it highlights things in the room that are important. So, you know, just keep it in the back of your mind, because there might be a point where like, oh, I wish I had this. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I remember a few hours ago I was playing and I saw that and now I actually have the battery to get it or something like that. So I think that is like an underrated part of the game, is making sure to use that.
That's something I really forgot about. I regrettably didn't use it that often. It can be, the controls on that can be a little bit stiff, but it is like it's basically like a scanner vision. It's very manual. So you have to, it's basically like a zoom in camera, and you have to manually move it around, and it won't permanently tag things, but it will label them when you have the vision hovered over them. And that definitely helped me in a couple of spots for sure. So this is a minor thing. I thought you would probably acknowledge this too, is that you can't, as far as I know, you can't fast forward cutscenes. Yes. And like, you can't fast forward the text VO either. I was like, oh my God, come on, come on, come on.
Yep. That is definitely something I noticed.
There's no VO. So like the double combo of that, like not being able to fast forward and like the VO, it's the VO is like that. I call it the peanuts thing, where it's all a bunch of murmurs, like murmur, 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 with all the characters. And some of them are funny, like the Captain Plankbeard sort of murmuring VO is pretty funny. But it can get a little bit grating at times, given that you can't fast forward through it.
Yep, that is, I 100% agree with that. I mean, you know how I play games, and that was definitely something that was like, oh my goodness, especially when I was doing that gambling thing. It's like, okay, it takes like 5 minutes to gamble each time. It's like, oh, okay.
It does.
Talk faster.
Yeah, there was a few times where I thought I was going insane. I checked the controls menu like two or three times. I'm like, are you sure there's no like fast forward button? I'm like, oh my God. But yeah, that's one thing to keep in mind. But broadly speaking, the tone and the humor in the game helps carry a lot of those setbacks through to where it's still entertaining. And then the final caveat, and I don't think we've ever touched upon this with any of the episodes in this podcast, is the big E word, that is emulation. So I myself, like I said, in this podcast, pretty much everyone who's been on this podcast is a pretty staunch supporter of physical games when possible, when we can. You know, there are exceptions like with GameCube, when the games are very, very expensive, triple digits, in fact. And so what I will say about this game is there is the emulator for GameCube called Dolphin. It's very easy to use. It's very easy to play games on. I tell people I was able to figure it out, and I'm like almost a boomer. So pretty much anyone should be able to figure it out. And I will say, with the case of emulating Chibi Robo, the ROM for the game is right there on the archive.org site. It's not illegal. It's literally sitting right there. You don't have to illegally download it. And it's very easy. You just download the ROM. You open it from the Dolphin app. And the only thing is to just make sure you're mapping your buttons to what you want. I found it surprisingly easy. I believe this is the first game that I've ever really fully played through via emulation. And while it is never going to be my ideal or primary focus of gaming, the obvious sort of ethics of it aside, I just want to try to play things on a platform they were originally intended for or released on. That is an aspect that I did want to point out. You're pretty involved with emulation. I know you have a Steam Deck. In fact, that's where you replayed this game. Played well on deck. It obviously plays well emulation on PC. So
yeah,
take it away with your broad thoughts about emulation, and then specifically with Chibi Robo.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm definitely not opposed to emulation. I love my Steam Deck, so that is how I play like all old games at this point. But I just wish that, and we can talk about it shortly as we talk about the sequels briefly, but I just wish that this game was more popular, because this is just like a game where it's like, I'm not sure how else you're going to play it, because the game is so expensive to buy physically, and they've never, like, there was a Wii port of this game, but only in Japan, and that is it. So it's like, unless you're speaking Japanese, I mean, that's probably not going to help you much either. So it's, you're kind of just, unfortunately, it's like really your only option. And I don't see it getting ported anytime soon.
You know, maybe one day a group of us will we'll make a trip to Japan, and on the docket will be to acquire a copy of Chibi Robo for Wii, perhaps. Who knows? But yeah, that is one aspect. In fact, I think what I'll do is I may even consider just putting a link to the archive, .org for the game's ROM in the episode description. Because again, it is right there, basically a public access, public domain site. And that's why I didn't really feel that bad about doing it. And I think I mentioned this with, coincidentally enough, with Chrono Trigger, like Nintendo, whomever, Bandai, whoever's responsible, whoever owns it, just port it forward. Like, please get the GameCube library on Switch Online. A GameCube Mini with a full library would be so cool with how well they did, like NES and SNES classics. Some type of GameCube support with the library would be so amazing, because that is an awesome console with such a wonderful library of games, I think. And that's one thing with this game that I wanted to highlight in this episode. I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, because it is the way that I played the game. I really didn't have any issue. And even the button mapping, I wouldn't consider it, wouldn't call it an issue, because it's just part of emulation and remapping the controls. So one of the final things that I wanted to touch on is there are future games in the series. This was the first one. I'll run through the list of games, and you can shout out the ones that you have experience with or have played or have an opinion on. So other Chibi Robo games was Chibi Robo Park Patrol was released in 2007 on the Nintendo DS. The one after that was called, I'm going to butcher this name, my goodness, Okairi Chibi Robo Happy Richie Osoji. That is like the most Japanese English hybrid video game name ever. That was released on 2009 for the Nintendo DS. Then there was, Brian just mentioned this, there was the remake of the original on Wii. Unfortunately, Japanese only, no English option, was released on June 11th, 2009. And then the final two games in the series on 3DS were Chibi Robo Photo Finder in 2013 and then Chibi Robo Ziplash in 2015, again, both for the 3DS. And so, Brian, expound upon your experience with the sequels in the vaunted Chibi Robo empire.
So I had Park Patrol like in high school after playing the original Chibi Robo, and I dabbled with it, and I didn't finish it until I actually played it again many years later, probably like 4 or 5 years ago. All the games you play is a different Chibi Robo, because Chibi Robo is just a robot, you know, there's a lot of them. But it's a different in that it takes place like all outside, which is, as you know, totally different than the first game. And you're like, your goal is to revitalize a park. It still has a lot of the same elements with the toys, but they're like all like on Main Street. And then you go in, you buy flowers, you try to make your park very nice. It is definitely an interesting game. It is not as good as the first one. And it controls completely with touchscreen, which is probably a turnoff for some people.
So is it more Animal Crossing? Like, are you dealing with a little bit more with like agriculture or like...
Kinda, yeah. I mean, it still like plays the same as the first one does. Just a little more, like a little more advanced, but it does have more of like the, oh, we got to make this park nice kind of vibe. And then I've played the third one. I'm not even going to try to say that you said it. It only came out in Japan, unfortunately, but there is a fan translation called Chibi Robo Clean Sweep, and that is honestly, I think, the best Chibi Robo game. I have to say, I love this first one, but going back to the first one after playing that third one on DS this year, like I played in like January, I think, it is the same thing, but just a lot more improved and deep, which it's hard to recommend because, you know, you have to use a fan translation and then it's a DS game and it's touchscreen only, but it plays the same. It takes place in a house. You have to help the family. You know, it's a nice little Easter egg is that the mom in Chibi Robo Clean Sweep is Jenny from the first game. So there's some ties to the first game. It's a true sequel and it has the same gameplay loop, but there's more involved. I feel like one complaint I have about the first game is that like cleaning is required for money and stuff, but it doesn't really ultimately feel like, at a certain point, you don't really need to do it anymore. But like Clean Sweep has like whole mechanics where you like each room has cleaning percentages and you want to try to keep them as close to 100 as you can. And introduces a vacuum, the sergeant, the egg army's back. So there's a lot of really good stuff about that game. So I would, you know, if someone plays Chibi Robo 1 and wants more, that's the one I would say to play. And then Photo Finder and Ziplash I've not played. I know Ziplash is a 2D platformer and it totally killed the series. So I've said, you know, I one day I want to try it just to see, but I've heard very bad things about it.
Yeah, Photo Finder, at least off the name, sounds like it would be a Pokemon Snap sort of knockoff. I am not sure, to be honest.
But I want to dabble with it because I've heard it's actually a little more in-depth than I thought it was, but it is just like a 3DS, like AR camera game. So, you know, still not quite what you want.
It's so fascinating to run through all these games and find out more about them, given how little the original seems to have sold. Nintendo, I think they, you know, for a lot of the flack that they get, they stick with franchises a lot. Like Metroid is a good example. The Metroid games don't necessarily sell that well as compared to a lot of their other franchises, but they stick with some of these. I mean, obviously their choice of projects of what franchises they stick with is has been a topic of much discussion, or what games they choose to revive or remake, and they've certainly been better about that. I mean, we're getting a Super Mario RPG remake around the time that this episode will release, and we're getting a Paper Mario Thousand Year Door remake. So who knows? We got a remake of Link's Awakening, like kind of a handheld exclusive Zelda. So who knows? I believe Nintendo, I don't know which account it was on Twitter, but they tweeted out a picture of Chibi Robo in flames many years ago, just kind of out of the blue. And I was like, what are they doing? Like, what is going on? So who knows? I would assume they own the rights to it. It would be cool. Modernize the controls, maybe do a remake of this game would actually be really, really cool. It would be really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, Chibi Robo is still around. I mean, he hasn't been around in his own game since 2015, but they made an amiibo of him. And then, you know, he's in Smash Brothers Ultimate. I mean, you know, he's a, what are they called, the spirits? There's two of him.
Oh, and yeah, Shadow Fighter, whatever they're called.
There's two spirits of him, and then there's a Mii costume of Chibi Robo. So, you know, he's gone, but he's not totally forgotten. So you never know.
They should put him in Mario Kart.
I know.
It's like a perfect Mario Kart character. Yeah, it's such a great episode to explore, like a minor character in a minor game like this. Yeah, and who knows? I mean, it would be great. I would be totally be open to another entry in this series, give it a nice glow up, even if it is a remake of the original. I think it definitely has a lot of potential because the core, we touched on it already, but the core gameplay loop is still there. I think holds up remarkably well, despite, like I said, some aspects. But now I have one final surprise. I try to, you know, I'm always full of surprises on this podcast. And my surprise is partially for the audience, but it's mostly for my guest here, in this that in the first time in this podcast's history, we are using a listener write-in.
Oh, boy.
This listener's name is, we will call them Cedar, like the tree. And Cedar wrote in, "Dear Wisp, I am a huge fan of the podcast. My sources recently informed me that you were doing an episode on Chibi Robo. And upon examining the game, looking at the premise and the characters and the story and the environment, given how big of a fan Brian is of Chibi Robo and the property, what would he think of a Chibi Robo adaptation into a movie or TV show?" They wanted to expand upon, they're full of ideas. They're very passionate, creatively inspired individual. They said, "Given the Toy Story premise, would you want it to be a full CGI movie like a Toy Story, or perhaps maybe a combination of CGI and live action? Because they said how cute Chibi Robo is. He is honestly as adorable as Paddington. And there's definitely potential there for as didn't make not only one, but potentially a sequel of two beloved movies as beloved as the Paddington movies are." So what are your thoughts on a potential Chibi Robo TV or movie adaptation?
I feel like it would be a hard, I don't know. I feel like it would be a hard story to tell in a movie. I feel like a TV show would work better. You could have the overarching plot go across the season, and then you could have each episode could focus on like a different toy, perhaps. Maybe that would be a way to go about it. I feel like full animated would have to be the way. I don't know what you think, but because so many of the characters are toys, you're already kind of going that way anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, but it also could be interesting. I like the idea of a little, what if he's like a little claymation Chibi Robo? I mean, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool too. I think that would fit in like with like how I don't want to say clunky, but how deliberate his movement is with traversal. I think it would translate to like stop motion perhaps as well, would be really, really cool. I think the characters would translate. And yeah, I think a sequel, like if you were to do a season 2 of a TV show or maybe like a sequel, you could do that sequel where Jenny is older, because yes, again, the Chibi Robo lore is just so expansive. It's much more expansive than I certainly thought, and I'm sure many people would have ever expected before starting this episode, but yeah, I think there is so much in it. I do agree. I think a TV show would be best because there is so many characters and so many storylines to explore. And, you know, I think maybe you could kind of spend each episode introducing a different room for every like first few episodes and then really take off from there with what is going on. And the day night cycle is certainly something you can incorporate. I think there's just so much possibility for an adaptation, but I do lean towards it being animated. I mean, I can't imagine Nintendo ever turning something animated into a live action adaptation. There's no way that they would ever do that, right? Like not with any, especially not with any of their major properties. Like that would be asinine to try to translate, like, I don't know, Mario or Zelda into live action. That would just be absolutely insane. I can't imagine that. The horror.
I'm not the big adaption guy, but for Chibi Robo, I love it because anything to bring the series back. Well, also, like, you could take the bones of this story, change it slightly, you know, keep the toys, keep everything in it, but just like kind of rework how it is structured. And you could see this thing as like an hour and a half Pixar style emotional movie. I mean, you could definitely see it with how the story kind of the themes it touches on and that, like where it ends up going and, you know, the emotions behind it. You know, you could get something like that. And he's cute, like you said. I mean, he's a cute character, so he would be very marketable with, you know, people that actually care about him, unlike apparently Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, Chibi Robo is just ripe for a Funko, as far as I'm concerned. Funko is another thing that you, of course, are a huge fan of. I always try to let you know when a unique Spider-Man Funko is on sale, for example. Yeah, he's just ripe for a Funko. Did he ever get an Amiibo?
Yes, he does. It came with Ziplash. I have it sitting on my desk right here.
Awesome. Perfect. Yeah. So, I mean, between just the first game alone, not even to mention the subsequent sequels and the lore, and obviously the cuteness of the character, there's so much more to mine from the Chibi Robo franchise. And if it was released as a movie, would you go to the theater to watch it?
I would have to. I had to be there day one. I had to buy all the tickets just to show support, just to give them to random people so they go.
You know, we could definitely do like a meetup and like rent out an entire theater. I would totally be down to do that. And so like you would, of course, get like a large popcorn and get like a candy from the second row as well, right? What that would be like?
Yes, of course.
That'd be priority. Okay.
Extra large, extra large.
Extra large with butter?
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe they could have little Chibi Robos walking around, you know, who knows?
That would be amazing. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of potential for this franchise. Nintendo, Mr. Miyamoto, I know you guys are in the mood for adaptations again. This is just rife. Give us a call. I have many consultants on standby. There's an expert right here. Like I said, we had a passionate listener write in who just couldn't wait to inquire and get the expert's opinion on the potential of this. So our lines are always open. The email address for the podcast is readily available. We could totally make it happen for sure. But yeah, thank you for providing your insight and expertise on that.
Of course.
Not just on the adaptation, but on the overall potential media empire that is Chibi Robo. And to wrap up, was there anything else that you wanted to shout out?
No, I think non-spoilers aside, I think we covered everything very thoroughly. I'm very happy with our discussion. I'm very glad that you ended up liking the game. I'm sure you went in with very confused feelings towards it. You probably didn't know exactly what it was going to be like. Maybe you were a little scared, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did. I went in pretty much completely blind. I didn't even watch like a trailer, any gameplay, nothing. I want to do that even more nowadays. It's so much more rewarding, whether it's a movie or a game or a TV show. And I try to listen to people, like, people want to call it shilling or whatever, just enthusiastic evangelism. That's what this podcast is about. And this episode, again, is just proof is in the pudding for it. Like, there is a reason why people such as yourself enthusiastically evangelize and promote something like this. And there's something to it. It taps into something beyond just pressing of a buttons. So no, this has been an absolute delight. We'll definitely try to do another episode in the future. I'll definitely try to be on the esteemed Backlog Brain Rot podcast. Not for any reality TV episode, definitely, but maybe another special episode again.
Yes. I think
maybe like a Mario Wonder special episode. I got to get back to that game too. Life's been crazy for me as well, but we'll definitely plan something else. And thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to everyone for listening, and as always, we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.